Awesome. All right, guys. Super, super excited for this episode on the Superior Man podcast. I am joined with Dr. Robert Glover, the author of No More Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm sure many other books as well. So I'm super, super excited to get into the questions today and really dive deep. But before we do start, I wanted to first say thank you so much for hopping on. Your book, No More Mr. Nice Guy, is something that I actually recommend to every single one of my clients. I tell them it's a must read that they have to go through. And it's also been such an integral book in my own personal journey of overcoming a lot of my own nice guy behaviors. And before I even read the book, I was kind of ignorant of my own ignorance. I didn't even know I had these nice guy behaviors. And when I read the book, it was like, holy crap, like this is exactly me. And it was like pointing out everything. So I just want to say thank you so much for hopping on. And for those who don't know who Dr. Glover is, why don't you tell my audience a little bit about your background, what it is that you do, what you teach, and how you even got started in this to begin with?
All right. Well, that's a big story, so I'll try to condense it. So thank you for the invitation, and thank you for the kind words of how my book and work has affected you. And thank you for spreading the word about No More Mr. Nice Guy. And so just about me, I guess I'll start. You know, as a young man, I grew up in, kind of a traditional American family. Dad was kind of angry and controlling, and mom was codependent and raised me to be different from my father. I grew up during the 60s and 70s where I heard angry feminism railing against men. And so I didn't want to be that bad guy. I wanted to be the good guy that women said they wanted. I also grew up in a fundamental Christian church, so I grew up with kind of all that, just that rigidness and that fear of eternal damnation. And background, I got 2 degrees in religion. I was a minister for 8 years, wow. Not religious now, but that was kind of previous lifetime. But all of that led to who I am today. And around 25 years ago or so, I was in my second marriage. And my then wife, basically just laid down the law. She said, you need help. You need to go to counseling. You need to get some therapy because, you can be such a nice guy and everybody thinks you're a great guy and you treat me really well, but then you switch and you're not so nice and you hurt me deeply. And I can't live with this passive aggressive behavior anymore. She said, I'd rather be with an asshole because at least I know an asshole is going to treat me the same way all the time. And I thought, this doesn't make sense. You're angry all the time. You're never happy. It's never good enough. You're always complaining. I'm always trying to make you happy, trying to do it right. Okay. I'll go to counseling. And I went trying to figure out why being a nice guy didn't make her happier, why it didn't make her want to have sex with me, why it didn't make her approve of me. And also want to know why it didn't work that, it's like I was always giving to her, but she never seemed to give anything back to me. So I went to therapy to try to figure that out. Why wasn't being a nice guy working? And luckily, I got into some good situations where I learned to start kind of opening up and looking at my own shame, my own guilt, learned to start making my needs a priority, learned to set boundaries, learned to ask for what I want, got reconnected with men, quit trying to make my wife happy all the time, started being more honest and trustworthy and transparent. And along the line, I was a marriage and family therapist during this time. I was in private practice. And it seems like I started noticing in me my nice guy traits and my roadmap that thought, well, this is the way to get love and get my needs met and make people happy is be a nice guy. And I noticed at that time that couples coming to see me or men coming to work with me, a lot of men were saying the same thing I was. I could finish their sentences. I'm a nice guy. I treat her better than her ex. I'm raising her kids. I do everything for her. I'm trying to make her happy. It's never good enough. When's it going to be my turn? How come she's angry all the time? How come she never wants to have sex anymore? And I thought, wow, these guys are just like me. I'm not the only person who had this roadmap, this life paradigm. So 25 plus years ago, I started my first No More Mr. Nice Guy men's group. And we started meeting every other week and then soon added another group. And I started writing just lessons to give to these guys about what I was learning about being a nice guy about where it came from, why it didn't work, how to live life more effectively. And the guys and often their wives and girlfriends kept saying, you need to write a book. You need to go on Oprah. You know, this could be a bestseller. There's lots of guys out there that need that book. So it took me about 6-7 years to write the book, about 3 years to get it published. It came out now. We're talking late 2019. So it came out 2003. So it came out about 16 years ago. And, you know, a lot of publishers turned the book down. They said, we like the book, but our marketing department says men won't buy a self-help book, especially one that tells them they're a loser. And I said, well, it's not really what the book says. And you don't know the guys I'm writing about. They want to be good men. They want to improve themselves. And so it came out 17 years ago, and my royalty checks keep getting bigger every year. A lot because guys like you recommend it to every guy they work with. So, you know, whether it's guys in 12-step programs, working with their coaches, Mankind Project, with working with their therapists, you know, the book's caught on and people found the value in it. So I'm just excited I get to keep talking about it and talk to people like you and help the men out there who need to hear what this is about.
Wow, that's an amazing journey. So I'm just curious, you said, you know, it seems like you, I guess, transitioned from a nice guy yourself to kind of figuring out what those behaviors were to overcome it. But how does one become a nice guy to begin with?
Okay, that's a good question. And there's no like one cookie cutter way that guys become nice guys. And I'll give you the short version. And I talk more about this in the book, No More Mr. Nice Guy. And I talk about it in my workshops. But just kind of the quick child development life skill version is that all children, because they're dependent, they're vulnerable, they're powerless, tend to experience various uncomfortable or painful experiences in life, whether it's being hungry, not being fed, whether it's having an upset stomach or being cold or needing to go to the bathroom or needing to be held. And then beyond that, you know, often children as they grow up experiences other painful experiences of abandonment or neglect or even abuse or parents fighting or, you know, dad leaving or mom being depressed and sad or, you know, or parents being addicts. I mean, any number of things can contribute to painful or uncomfortable feeling in children. Because children by nature are narcissistic, they believe that they are the cause of everything. The world revolves around them. They believe they are not only the cause of everything they experience, but perhaps they can also be the solution to it, that they can fix it. So children inaccurately internalize at a very young age. I mean, we're talking in the womb, days old, weeks old, months old, with a very immature mind that doesn't have reasoning capability. They emotionally internalize, there's something wrong with me, and they do two things without having conscious ability. They do two things. One is they try to find ways to manage or soothe the uncomfortable feelings. So a child might cry, or they might stick a thumb in their mouth, or they might just start to stare at the mobile above them, or they might become needless and wantless. There's no rationality to it. It's just kind of an instinctual response to uncomfortable feelings. The other thing that children naturally try to do is as they start trying to anticipate what caused these painful experiences, they try to do things to prevent them from happening in the future. Now, all of this gets recorded at a deep emotional level, not at a cognitive level in the human brain. We all have this. We all experience it. So we all experience uncomfortable feelings. We all develop mechanisms to try to manage the feelings of discomfort, and we all develop mechanisms to try to prevent those from happening again. And that can take lots of different forms. For the guys I work with, it takes this form of being the nice guy, of being needless and wantless, of being low maintenance, of never being a problem, of trying to please everybody, of giving, you know, and making their needs a low priority. It takes a lot of different manifestations for the nice guy, but usually what it boils down to is, just to put it in a nutshell, the nice guy is a person who's an inaccurately internalized an emotional belief, there's something wrong with me, and that if people knew that, they're going to reject me or abandon me or hurt me, so I've got to hide it, and I've got to become what I think other people want me to be, to get their love and approval and get my needs met. So nice guys are trying to become something else while hiding certain fundamental things about them. Most often, their needs, their wants, and their sexuality. That all gets tucked away in this nice tiny compartment because they believe that if people see those things in them, they'll react negatively to them. So that's kind of, you know, the paradigm of how all humans kind of adapt their life roadmap. Now, I'll just add one more piece. All humans come into adulthood believing that emotional roadmap is 100% accurate and will guide them successfully through life. We all do. That's where therapy and coaching and, you know, ayahuasca and other things come in handy, is to begin to get, help us become aware of and break out of those emotionally internalized roadmaps that we created, again, when we were extremely immature, vulnerable, and powerless. We're not immature now. We're not vulnerable. We're not powerless. And we have, we can use parts of our brain that we didn't have online when we were small children to make more conscious decisions. But the problem is, what we stored up in the emotional part of our brain, a very primitive part of our brain, is wired into every other part of our brain and tends to influence all of our thinking, our observation, our view of ourselves in the world. And it's kind of our operating language, the machine language, the DOS, the, you know, the code written below the what our life programs are run on. And we think it's 100% accurate. Often we never challenge it or question it. So the nice guy might walk through life thinking, yeah, if I just avoid all conflict, if I sacrifice my needs and wants, if I hide everything about me that might get a negative reaction, if I become a chameleon and try to please everybody, then I'll be liked and loved and get my needs met and have a good life. And we think that makes perfect sense. And until it doesn't work, and for a number of reasons, but which is true for all internalized survival mechanisms from infancy and childhood. None of them really work, with one caveat. Sometimes they kind of work if we get in toxic situations that feel a lot like the situations we develop those mechanisms in as children. And so lo and behold, what do most of us do? We go out and recreate the same familiar situations in life that feel familiar, even if they're not particularly fulfilling.
Right.
Were you expecting all that? I kind of gave you the big version of it.
That was super, super helpful. Even for myself, like, and a lot of the guys I work with, one of the biggest things for me was like, I had trouble meeting women. So when I started meeting women, I noticed that these behaviors were there, like being chameleon-like, almost seeking approval, seeking validation. And once I overcame that, and recently I got into a relationship, we've been in a relationship almost 2 years, I noticed these behaviors started coming up in the relationship. And I'm like, yeah. Holy crap, this is like a whole matrix. And so now with me and my girlfriend, we realize that, especially for me, the things that I almost do in the relationship are what I had experiences with my parents. Because I had a really traumatic experience like when I grew up. So now it's almost like I use my relationship as a way to grow and mm-hmm. kind of overcome those things. And it's been a heck of a journey because it's always, I'm just always learning about myself and realizing all these behaviors. For example, with my girlfriend for a while, like there was some things that I wanted, but I would never say, and then I would start almost blaming her for it. And yeah. then I was like, why am I blaming her for it? So I actually sat down with her. We had a talk and it was an amazing talk and we got on the same page. And I was like, holy crap, all this time that I had been causing almost this pain for myself and almost distancing myself from my girlfriend was all my fault. It wasn't her fault. She was okay with what I actually wanted. So it was just really amazing to kind of understand that. And now I almost use, it sounds bad, but I almost use the relationship as a way to personally grow and also grow the relationship. And I realized that a lot of it is on me. It's not on her. Most of it is actually on me.
Yeah. And you say it sounds bad, but it doesn't sound bad at all. So let me kind of make, that brought up three thoughts to my mind. The first is I read years ago in a book on codependency that we tend to be attracted to and create relationships with people who have some of the worst traits of both of our parents. And the people we're attracted to are doing the same thing. They're attracted to us because we have some of the worst traits of both of their parents. And then, like I said, I've been a marriage therapist for 30 years and I'm on my third marriage. So one thing that is abundantly clear to me is that we unconsciously do go out and co-create relational systems that feel really familiar to us because they let us use whatever our survival mechanisms were in childhood. Well, whatever our relationship mechanisms were that got us through a relationship with mom and dad, you know, we're going to seek people that we can use those with in adulthood, because that's all we got. That's all we got in our toolbox. So that's the first piece. The second piece is one of the things I've been teaching for years now is that both conscious dating and conscious relationship can be powerful personal growth machines. If, because they do, how we date and how we do relationship will bring up all of our old stuff. They'll bring up our self-limiting beliefs. They'll bring up our view of ourselves, our view of the world, our view of love, our view of sex, our view of women. They'll trigger everything. And if we can just be conscious and watch that, as you said, we can grow us. We can help our partner grow. We can grow the relationship we're in. And that's my philosophy. And that's what I teach men, is that if you will show up in a very conscious way, wherever you get stuck, wherever you're struggling, wherever you and your partner seem to be doing the same dance, there's lots of information there. And oftentimes we can't get this figured out on our own. Sometimes we need a coach. We'll need a therapist. We'll need, you know, a couples group or something to help us get through. And I've used a lot of those resources in my own relationships. And yeah, a lot of times we're blaming stuff on our partner. And when you were talking, I thought, you know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, in a relationship, I thought, well, you know, my friends want me to go do this with them, but if I bring it up to my partner, she'll be upset that I'm going off to go do this. So I don't do it. Then I resent her. Then I feel deprived. Then all of a sudden it comes out, you know, and she goes, well, why didn't you just say something? You know, I go, well, I thought I'd get a negative reaction, and then go, why? Well, because I was projecting that onto you. And so, yeah, a lot of times you find out this is on me. And the other thing you find out for your listeners, I mean, I wrote No More Mr. Nice Guy, you know, finished it 20 years ago. I've been teaching it, leading seminars and workshops. I have an online university. This is my bread and butter. And I got into a new marriage about 3 years ago. And like about a year into the marriage, all of a sudden, I see my nice guy patterns coming up again. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, what's happening here? You know, I thought I'd address these and dealt with them. I should know better. And I even remember during that time, I went back to New York City to reread for an audible version of No More Mr. Nice Guy. The original version was read by a professional voice. But, you know, after several years, I told my agent, I want to read it. I want it in my voice. They gave us a new contract. So I'm reading No More Mr. Nice Guy for 3 days for this audible version. And I'm going, oh yeah, I'm doing that again. Oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Oh yeah, this is good information. This is good advice. So I think the reason for that is, as I said, because so much of how we go about doing a relationship and so much of our paradigm is recorded at this unconscious emotional level, that it's gonna get triggered both when we like are engaging with women, you know, in a dating context, or we get into a new relationship. So for example, a lot of guys will tell me, hey, when I first met my girlfriend, you know, I was setting the tone and taking the lead. I was, you know, creating polarity. I was doing all these great things that turned her on. We're having a great time. But now that we've been together for 3 months, 6 months, whatever, it goes, now I don't want to lose her. And I'm playing it safe, and I'm being passive, and I'm leaving too many decisions up to her, and I'm not creating polarity, and I'm not rocking the boat, and she's getting bored, and she's starting fights, and she never wants to have sex anymore. And you know, so that happens. You know, you know maybe even if you were doing a really good job, you know, of leading and setting the tone when you met the woman, once we kind of get attached to the outcome, well, I don't want to lose her, I want to keep her around, we start playing it safe. And that's the exact wrong thing to do in those contexts. But again, the beauty of that is when I like figured out that I was getting triggered in my relationship with my new wife a couple years ago, I thought, all right, I'm not done with my work yet. So I went out and found a coach that came highly recommended. I got into a men's program. It was even funny. The coach says, Robert, your book's on my reading list. I recommend it to all the men I work with. What do you want from me? And I said, hey, I still got my stuff. I still got my work to do. And, you know, and you've got a background and training and point of view that I value, and I need the help. So I'm still working with that coach and in that program 2 years later, and I see the positive effects in my relationship. My marriage feels sound. It feels strong. It's loving. It's supportive. It's fun. It's playful. But yeah, And I'll probably bump into more stuff that, you know, I'll have to then be more conscious, go to work on it, show up in a more conscious way, and keep cleaning out that old baggage stored up at an emotional level. So the process never really ends. We guys want to get it done and be finished with it. But if we'll approach this, hey, this is a lifelong process, and just welcome it, it's an adventure. It's a lot of fun.
Got it. So for someone who's listening to this right now thinking, holy crap, I might be a nice guy, what are some like habits or things can a nice guy do to start actually overcoming a lot of his nice guy behaviors?
Well, I'll kind of lay out the sequence of things that I started working on in myself before I even realized I was doing what I'll call nice guy recovery. Mm-hmm. I would say, number one, don't try to do it alone. You didn't become a nice guy in social isolation. You became a nice guy in the context of relationship, you know, mom, dad, family, you know, school, church, world, peers. And it manifests in a social context. So most nice guys, because we're trying to hide all those things about us that we feel vulnerable about, don't want people to know, and even like we've been hiding from ourselves a lot of times, we really need to go find a safe place. Go find safe people, a coach, a therapist, minister, rabbi, men's group, 12-step group, Mankind Project, Landmark. Go find something, some place where you can start just opening up and being you. Because the real issue with nice guy syndrome is the recovery from nice guy syndrome isn't about becoming a better person or a different person. It's really about becoming more us. It's about accepting us, loving us, embracing us, and then being us, all of us in the world. Because as long as we're trying to be something different to get approval or hide things about us, there's not a real me there. There's not a real you there. And people can't be attracted to that or drawn to that. And we can't be honest, and we can't get our needs met, and we can't be interesting if we're hiding things or trying to be chameleon-like. So I say, number one, go find a safe place and start just revealing you. I started going to a 12-step program, is how I began, and just started revealing everything about me I'd never shared with anybody before. And it felt liberating. I mean, this program like met at 6 o'clock in the morning, one day a week, about an hour from my house. And I looked forward to going to that program because for the first time in my life, after growing up, you know, in this dysfunctional family, religion, hiding everything, trying to be good, never, you know, don't want to be bad because you're going to go to hell for eternity kind of thing. And I just started sharing. Now, at about that same time, I started working with a therapist, worked with her for a while, then later joined a men's group and was in it for several years. And as I said, even to this day, I've got a coach and a men's group that I'm in. Just 2 weeks ago, we got back from 6 days in the Mojave Desert, where 60 of us were just, you know, hunkered down, you know, celebrating being men and taking each other deeper. And I came back from that, for example, with the commitment to be more open-hearted and receptive with my wife. And like for the last 2 weeks, like she'd been on cloud nine. And I came home and said, hey, I realize I don't let you give me all the love you want to give me. That's on me. Every day I'm going to work at opening my heart even more to all the love you want to give me. And like, you know, this woman's just been as happy as she could be and just pouring her love out over me. So I, you know, again, I keep learning, but this is in the context of other people. So go find safe people, coach, therapist, group, whatever. Another piece early on that I really started working on in my own recovery process was learning to be honest. As I said, I went to these 12-step groups and then therapy and then a men's group. And I just started telling all the stuff that, you know, I'd never told anybody. And now that I can say, you know, 25 years later, there isn't anything about me. I got no secrets. There's nothing about me that at least somebody on this planet doesn't know about. And that's true for my wife. I mean, she knows the passcode on my phone. She can access everything I have. I've got no secrets. I've got nothing hidden. She knows how I feel, how I think, what I want, what I do, where I'm at, who I'm with. Everything is in the open. That's not true for most nice guys. After a lot of my workshops and seminars, probably, I take this as maybe the highest compliment somebody can give me, but men will say, Robert, I appreciate how authentic you are, how real you are. And I just soak that in because 30 years ago, nobody would have complimented me on being authentic. I was controlled. I was trying to do it right. I was chameleon-like. So go start practicing telling the truth, the whole truth. You know, no, don't shade anything, don't hide anything, don't leave anything out. And again, we need to practice that with safe people, because it's kind of scary if you've kind of been managing the truth all of your life. But it is powerful to start telling the truth. Another piece is start connecting with men. A fairly consistent trait with nice guys, not all, but many, is that we're more comfortable with women. We like the validation that women give us. So we listen to them talk. We're the good boy. We're the good man. I call it hanging out in the nursery, where, you know, we just get all this love and validation from women. Even if they don't want to have sex with us, oh, you're such a great guy. You listen to me talk about the jerk that keeps treating me bad, blah, blah, blah. So work at going to connect with men. And again, like I said, you know, I'm in a program with 60 other men. And I love knowing, I just got off earlier today with a Zoom call with 7 other guys who I've been meeting with for a year now. We meet every other week. And that's separate from the men's program I'm in. I've got a writer's group with 5 or 6 other guys every morning online, 9 o'clock my time. We're online writing on Zoom for an hour. I've got an exercise accountability group. I'm with 2 other guys on WhatsApp. Every day we check in. What's your plan today for exercise? How'd you do? We're supporting each other. I built systems throughout my life to where I get to connect with men daily, regularly. After I get off this call with you, one of the men in my program who's been going through some pain, he and I are going to talk for a little bit later on. So connect with men. Connect with your masculine. Embrace yourself as a masculine being. So that's another really powerful piece. And then just one other I'll throw in there is start consciously working at making your needs a priority. Mm. For a lot of nice guys, we try to be needless and wantless. We operate by, let me throw out the covert contracts because it fits well here. And I'll come back to making your needs a priority. Nice guys, in my experience, tend to operate by 3 covert contracts. These are 3 emotional contracts with the world. With God, the world, with women, with everybody. Covert, and they're all if-then propositions. Covert contract number 1 for the nice guy. If I'm a good guy, then I'll be liked and loved. And women will want to sleep with me. So it's this, well, okay, if I'm good, then everybody's going to like me. But the problem is, okay, you know, who determines good? And that just being a good guy doesn't make people like you. In fact, often it makes you boring. Because you're not you, you're not real. And not everybody's going to like you anyway, and not every woman's going to want to sleep with you. Covert contract number 2, if I meet everybody else's needs without them having to ask, then they will meet my needs without me having to ask. Now, that doesn't work for a number of reasons, because 1, usually what we're giving to other people might not even be what they need to receive. Oh, we fix, we caretake, we solve their problems, we give them money, we make their car payment, we, you know, drive them somewhere. It's what we need to give them to feel value, right? And they don't know the contract exists. They don't know that they're supposed to be reading our mind and giving back to us. And unfortunately, we often tend to pick people that are not very good at giving. That's why we pick them, because we like giving to them. And to top that off, nice guys are terrible receivers, which we're going to come back to in just a moment. We're hard to give to because, like, we have shame or guilt, or we feel indebted, or like we're doing something wrong if we let people give to us. And then the 3rd covert contract is, if I do everything right, then I will have a smooth, problem-free world. Well, we can't do everything right, and we don't live in a smooth, problem-free world. But that's that hanging out in the nursery. Oh, if I do everything right, nothing will ever go wrong. Everything will be good. And I can sit around and watch TV and surf the internet and jerk off to porn and smoke dope all day. Oh, and play World of Warcraft till 2 in the morning. And life will be good. You're smiling. You know the guys that we've worked with. So going back to the meeting needs, part of the recovery paradigm for nice guy syndrome is you've got to start making your needs a priority. And that scares the shit out of most nice guys. That's why I get that deer in the headlight looks. Oh, fuck, that'll make me selfish. That'll make me a bad man. And as I've said to guys for a long time now, when I look up the word selfish in the dictionary, I want to see your picture. Not you're the selfish, narcissistic asshole that everybody's supposed to do what you want, but part of being a mature, responsible adult is that you take full accountability for getting your needs met. It's your job. It was mom and dad's job when you were a kid, but probably their job's done now. So it's your job to take responsibility for getting your needs met. And it's your job to fill your life with what I call cooperative reciprocal systems to help you get your needs met. This is friends. This is church. This is your personal trainer. This is your dentist. This is your accountant. This is your chiropractor. This is, you know, your men's group. This is your poker group. This is, you know, you got to fill your life with those things, and you got to let them give. Just like, you know, I came home, like I said, told my wife, I'm going to open my heart even further and let you give even more. Now, that's kind of a contrary thing for a nice guy. We think, well, I need to give more so she'll love me more. And when, you know, she like just lit up when I said, I'm going to let you give more to me. I'm going to say yes to you more, because that's how she shows love, is by giving and doing for me. So that, and every woman in my life I've ever been with has always told me, you're difficult to give to. So, you know, I think maybe it's true after enough people tell me that. So I work at letting people give to me. I work at giving to myself, because that's a mature thing to do.
Wow, that's super powerful. And as you said these things, I just started. The reason why I was smiling was because it was connecting not only on a personal level, but a lot of guys that I work with. The other day I was talking to one of my clients. He's like, yo, I went up to this girl. I told her like, hey, I'm searching for Starbucks, and then like tried to get into a conversation with her. And I'm like, were you really searching for Starbucks? And he's like, no, I was just using that as an excuse. Yeah. And one of the things I told him was that you shouldn't have an excuse. You should just tell them exactly what you want. Make your desires known rather than hiding it. And even with, you know, I was explaining with my girlfriend, one of the things that I used to personally do was almost like try to fix things instead of just being there and listening to her problems. And then I would expect her to reward me with sex, but I wouldn't say it. And what would happen with her is she wouldn't know what I want. She would keep saying, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I was like, well, you should know what's wrong. And I'm thinking
that. You should know I listen to you talk so you'd have sex with me. There's only one reason why I would do that. You should know.
So then she would get pissed, because she's like, she thinks there's this distance and I'm not listening to her. And it was just a downward spiral where it's like now she's not even talking because I'm not even telling her what I want. And then when she would give me what I wanted, I would think, well, she's only doing this because she thinks I want it. So it was almost this like constant, and I'm like, this has to stop. So one thing that I've been working on is, you know, being able to communicate more, be vulnerable with, you know, the thoughts that I have, the emotions that I have, and also the desires that I have. Mm-hmm. And I just tell them exactly, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I'm feeling, and this is what I want. And then that way you can communicate back and forth and, you know, just have a real conversation, which has been really helpful. Over the past few months, our relationship has gotten like 10 times better than it was originally, just because of this one thing alone.
I believe you, because I've seen that both in my own interactions with women and as therapist, coach, group leader, teacher. I mean, I'm right on. What you were talking about is what I often call nice guy seduction. It goes back, well, I don't think this woman would want to be with me just for who I am. And she surely would not want to get naked with me just for who I am. So I got to seduce her. You know, I got to come up with, you know, I got to be clever. I got to be smart. I got to listen to her talk about her problems. I got to buy her drinks. I got to pay her rent. I got to help her move. I got to, you know, and then, you know, she'll like me and want to get naked with me. But yeah, as most of us know, that usually just ends us up in the friend zone. But even in relationship that, oh, if I just do this for her, then she'll automatically know what it is I want. And then, as we were talking a little bit earlier, then your resentments build. She doesn't even know why you're pissed off or what you expect. You know, when kind of my relational history, I married right out of college to my first wife, and then met my second wife while I was still in my first marriage. So I just went from one to another. And so my first two marriages took about 25 years of my life. And I got divorced from my second wife when I was in my late 40s. And that's approaching 20 years ago now. And I got out in the world and had to learn how to date. I had no idea how to date. And, you know, pickup was kind of just springing up out there. Neil Strauss had written The Game. And you know, so that was going on out there. And so, you know, pickup really didn't appeal to me, but it had some helpful things to it, just in terms of just getting out there and being social and getting around people. So I actually learned to date and got really successful at it and overcame a lot of my self-limiting beliefs and started living a life that just really authentically attracted women to me. I never had really had to work at it. And my clients started asking me, well, Robert, what are you doing? Teach us. And I said, well, I can't teach you how to date. I'm not a dating guru. I'm just this clumsy guy that has no clue, but somehow I seem to be getting lucky a lot lately. So I did start teaching men how to date. So I started having success. And I had a number of really good relationships over a period of about 12 years or so until I met the woman who's now my wife. And I said, we've been married, just celebrated our third anniversary. And but here's something that I started doing. I did this probably with about three or four different women that I'd got, you know, as we got to know each other, we'd been on a few dates and it looked like, hey, we're, you know, this may go somewhere. And I started telling the women just early on, I said, okay, if we keep seeing each other, here's what you can expect from me. And they've got their, I got their attention now. And I said, here's what you can expect. Number one, I will be conscious. I will pay attention to you, to me, to the relationship and what's going on. That doesn't have to be your job. You don't have to figure all this out. I'll be paying attention. I said, number two, I will be honest with you. Everything I tell you will be the complete truth. I won't leave anything out. I won't shade anything. You won't ever, you know, you won't ever find out after the fact that I didn't tell you the whole story. I said, I will be completely honest with you. Number three, I will be transparent with you. You will know what I think, what I feel, what I want, where I'm going, what I expect from you. I said, you won't have to guess. And number four, I will set the tone and take the lead. I said, I don't want to control anything, but I said, I'll show up with a plan. I'll be looking out for us. I'll lead. I'll create a great life, you know, for us to be a part of. And the women are all like, wow, that's fucking amazing. No man's ever said anything like that to me before. And, you know, they're like already, you know, they're already seeing, you know, like, you know, the wedding ceremony and all this, because they're thinking this guy's different. And every one of them asked me, they said, okay, that's really amazing. I've never had a man say that. And then they would all ask, what do you expect from me? I thought, that's a good question. That's a good woman that asked in return, what do you expect from me? And I said, tell me the truth. Treat me well, make my world beautiful. And then, you know, all of a sudden you see their wheels turn and they'll go, I can do that. I'm already thinking of ways I can do that. And every one of those women that I dated, whether it was for 3 months, 6 months, 3 or 4 years, told me at some point, you need to write another book because you need to tell men what you are doing because no man has ever showed up in this way for me. Now, I didn't always do that perfectly. And it's surely not how I showed up as a nice guy. But if you ask my wife today, am I conscious? She'd say, yeah, very much so. Am I honest? Yeah. You know, she's got all of her mistrust and abandonment issues like every woman does. And every time, you know, she questions, are you talking to somebody on the phone? Who's that text from? Where are you going? Where have you been? With? And I'm just, take a look. I'm an open book. She goes, oh, okay. You're right. You've told me the truth about everything. Never has one thing come back to bite me on the ass in 5 years of this relationship. I am transparent. I let her know what I think, what I feel, what I want, where I'm going. You know, you're mentioning, you know, asking for what we want. My wife is very affectionate, very physically affectionate. But, you know, if she starts feeling not so loved by me, or kind of, as you say, we slip into little routines, she quits being quite so physically affectionate. So I'm pretty open and direct. So I remember telling her, you know, a month or two ago, I said, you know, we've kind of gotten to a pattern where, you know, you're not like touching my cock all that much anymore. And, you know, without blame, I said, I just need you to know, I want you touching my cock all the time. You know, when we're in the kitchen together, when I'm driving the car, when we wake up in the morning, when we go to sleep at night, I said, I love the way you touch my cock. And I said, so whatever, for whatever reasons you've been thinking I didn't want my cock touched, you know, they were wrong. I, you know, that's what I want. I want you touching my cock all the time. Now, do I realistically want her touching my cock all the time? Well, most of the time. So, but, you know, why not say that? Why not just let them know, hey, baby, I love it. Every time I pass you, if you're kind of brushing your hand over it, you know, I love it. And what guy wouldn't love that? Well, maybe not everybody would, but probably most of us would. So why not just say that? Why not playfully, you know, lead them into that, you know, Here's what would just make me the happiest man on the planet, you know? And she likes obliging me in that way. So, you know, she's happy, I'm happy. But, you know, again, we've got to put that out there, and we got to be comfortable receiving. We got to be comfortable letting people give to us, or I promise you, we'll make it hard for them. We'll make it hard for them to give everything they want to give us.
Right, right. So I'm just curious, you mentioned, you know, your partner's also a little bit of her history. How do you find, because even this is something that I want to work on, is like, how do I find out with my current girlfriend or if I have any future partners, how do I find out their issues, whether it's abandonment issues or whether it's, you know, creating distance, whatever it is that's come up from their early life? How do you find that out for your partner that you're actually with?
Good question. That's probably one of the best questions a man could ask. No, really, I really mean that. I've been saying for a while, like I said, I've been a marriage therapist for 30 years, been teaching men to date for about 10, 12, 15 years now. And so, you know, I work with men on all parts of relationship, forming them, building them, you know, maintaining them. And one of the things I tell guys, so guys that are listening that are like single or new in a relationship, I tell guys my philosophy of dating is go as slowly as possible to find out as quickly as possible what a woman's nature is and how she fits into your life. Now, how do you fit into her life? Because as soon as we guys start trying to figure out, how can I make her happy? How can I fit into her life? How can I do things the way she wants? They actually get bored with us. You know, they don't want us fitting into our life. Now, you know, some of the women we meet might be pretty controlling. They want to take charge of it. And some women do want to be controlling. Well, you need to find that out as well. If you want a controlling woman in your life, well, you need to know that. You need to find out quickly. Does she like the way you lead, the way you set the tone, how you live your life? Find out. Invite her into your great life. I remember I dated one woman years ago. And pretty early on, she said, I like to play tennis. Would you like to play tennis with me sometime? I said, no. I said, no, it's your gig. You've got friends. Go play tennis. I said, you know, I tried to learn tennis when I was in ninth grade because my girlfriend, Linda Larson, played tennis, was on the tennis team. So I tried to learn tennis. And I'm athletic, but I suck at tennis. It's no fun for me. So I said, no, don't want to play. Well, after I broke up with her a few months later, and we stayed good friends and still consider her a friend, this woman says, you know, I'm glad you told me no, you didn't want to play tennis with me, because that just gave me the freedom to still go play with my friends, go, you know, play with the other partners that I had, know that I had the freedom and the time to go do that, and it was not a problem. And I said, yeah, I didn't have any desire to fit into that part of your life. And but yet she did love how she fit into my life. You know, going out listening to live music, listening to jazz, you know, having different adventures. So I tell guys, number one, you got to have a life that you invite a woman into. If you don't have a life, what are you going to invite her into? You're just going to try to figure out how to get her to like you. And unfortunately, for most men, here's my conclusion of how most men find a long-term partner. They find a woman who's not too bad looking and not too good looking either, because that's too scary, but not too bad looking, not too fat, not too good looking enough, who pays some attention to us and at some point is willing to have sex with us. That's the foundation that most men build their long-term relations on. And then once they start having sex and then they've got a girlfriend, and then they start finding out what her nature is. Like, she's moody, or she's critical, or she's not particularly generous, or she drinks too much, or she's on Facebook all the time and Instagram trying to get other men's attention. But now you're having sex with her and she's your girlfriend and you don't want to lose your sex partner and girlfriend. So now you just either put up with that stuff or you keep it in and resent it or you try to control her. When the truth is, she's probably not a real good match for you. But you didn't bother trying to find out if she was a good long-term match for you early on. Now, in my both personal and professional experience, as crazy as this might sound, I think it takes probably 3 years of conscious dating to really get to know somebody. Even when friendship, I think it probably takes about 3 years to really know another person. I've been in relationships, both with women and with guy friends, that right around the 3-year mark, they like reveal something about themselves or they start like acting differently. And you go, what just happened here? I didn't see that coming at all. And I can almost guarantee it. So you've been with your girlfriend about 2 years. I expect that somewhere in the next year or so, you'll probably kind of like discover something that you didn't really see coming. And it's not that maybe they hid it or lied to you. It's just like for a lot of people, something shifts kind of once that comfort level sets in. So that's why we got to go as slowly as possible to find out as quickly as possible what their nature is. Now, I'm going to add one other point here. You're smiling, but let me just pull this point out. I know you got something to say. Here's something that I discovered about women out in the dating world. And I'm just going to say this, you know, I may get flack, but I've said it a lot anyway. a lot of single women, there's a reason they're single. A lot of single women are flaky. And there's reason why they're not in a relationship. And when I mean flaky, it's like, you know, they make a date with you and don't show up. Or they agree to go out on a date with you and they got a boyfriend. Or, you know, you go out with them three or four times, maybe even start having sex, maybe even start like, hey, you're thinking this has something. And maybe they even tell you you're the most amazing man they've ever met. And then you don't hear from them for 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years. Or they tell you, I've decided to take a break from dating, or I've decided to get back with my ex, or, you know, I'm just confused. I don't know what I want. And you're going, wait a minute. This seemed to be going great. And I'm sure we men do that to them too. But one of the things I've found with many women, and I've had most of them, and this is true for the women I've been in a relationship with, they'll validate. Most women keep their running shoes laced up, ready to bolt from. And the better the relationship is, the more ready there are to bolt from it, which for us guys, that makes no sense. But for the female mind, it's kind of like, well, this is really good. It's going to go wrong at any time. I got to be prepared for that. Or this is really good. What am I not seeing here that I, you know, that's going to go bad? A lot of times women are just prepared for the worst possible thing to happen because they've had their trust, you know, violated and ruined and so many times. So these are the things we have to find out as men, and we got to go slow with that. And that means really go invite them into your life. Invite them around your friends and family. Get to know their friends and family. Don't move in with them right away. Don't start making these long-term plans right away. Go slowly and find out their nature and keep leading and keep asking, what is her nature? How does she fit into my life?
It's funny you mention all of this because my girlfriend, about a few months ago, she's like hinting at getting engaged. And I told her, like, listen, if after 4 years we're still together, 4.5 years we're still together, and we still like each other, then we can think about that. In the meantime, I want to know your formula as to what's going to make you happy in a relationship, and I'll also give you my formula. This plus this plus this plus this equals happy Mo. This plus this plus this equals happy Jamie. So that way I understand what her, you know, needs and wants are, and I'm just, you know, really trying to figure out in the context of the relationship how we can make our each other's needs and wants met. But it's almost like because they're so emotional, they want to get to it quick. Whereas for me, I'm like, hold on, you know, I don't know about this just yet. And even for me, like I always had problems with a trust because of previous relationships I've had. And she's the type of person who's very open. You know, she doesn't hide her phone away or, she, you know, I've met her family, I've met her friends. So with that, it's very, very, certain, but at the same time, you know, I want to take it slow. I want to make sure we go a few years before we even discuss any of that.
And why not just say, hey, let's have an adventure of getting to know each other. And I like that. Hey, if after X amount of time we still like each other, and you know, I know the depths of you and you know the depths of me, and you know, and I actually like what I found down there in the depths of you, and you like what you found in the depths of me, yeah, let's just go hand in hand into the sunset. Yeah, well, I mean, and again, there's a part of in all of us that wants to fuse quickly, to just, you know, cement this thing quickly. I think part of it, probably the biggest part of it, just goes back to our evolutionary history that, you know, we were all tribal. We were surrounded by people all the time. Our needs were met by this group of people. And now we all try to go get all of those tribal needs met by one person of the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. And they can't do it, number one. It took a tribe to meet all of our needs. So one person of the opposite sex can't do it, but we kind of expect them to. And we want to get fused. And then kind of like once we get fused, it's kind of like you belong to me, you know, because you are my girlfriend, you should. And she's thinking, well, because you are my boyfriend, you should. And we put all these shoulds on each other. It's called fusion. And we forget that, oh no, it's not their job. You know, they're volunteers, and you know they're not. And if we can create a relationship where we're together, because we both get a lot of value out of it, out of being together, and we each have a lot of other things in our life that we get a lot of value of either. Therefore, we got our tribe. We can have some really, really amazing dynamic relationships. But as soon as we kind of, oh, we got to get this thing locked down. You know, you got to be my boyfriend. You got to be my husband. You got to be this because that's what I expect. And that's what I need to feel secure. And that's where I expect to get all my needs met. And we all tend to do that. And it doesn't work very well. Right. So it sounds like you've got, you know, really a good rationale. You're being conscious. You're doing that first thing I told women I'd be conscious. So the women say, oh, let's get engaged. And I'm going, no, not time for that yet. Not right. Saying it ain't going to happen, but it's not time for it yet. Somebody's got to be on the bow of the ship looking for icebergs, right? We can't all be dancing and partying. Somebody's got to be driving the boat.
Right. Okay. So what I really want to get into now is the rapid fire questions. So these are questions that I got from a lot of people who wanted to ask you these questions, mainly my audience. So I'm going to go through them one by one. Let's rapid fire through them. Best answers really quickly. And we'll go from there. Cool.
Let's do it.
Awesome. So first question, what do women find sexy and attractive in a man?
Confidence. I've been saying that for years. Confidence. I tell men when a man interacts, if a man just walks into the room exuding confidence, he owns the room, he's a social animal, he's comfortable in his skin, it triggers the exact same brain chemicals in women's brains that would be triggered in his brain if they lifted their shirts and showed him their tits. It's evolutionary, it's biological. We don't have to think, do we like looking at those tits? They don't have to think, am I attracted to this confidence?
Gotcha. Okay. Next question is, there is a line between being loving and being a nice guy when in a relationship. What's the best way to approach this?
Anxiety. Anxiety is often the core dynamic in nice guy behavior. I'm anxious that you won't like me. I'm anxious you're going to leave me. I'm anxious you won't want to have sex with me. And to manage my anxiety, I'll be nice to you. And I'll do all these things to try to keep you happy and loving me. Love has no strings attached. Love is not anxiety-based. Love is what you do even when you're not feeling real loving towards the other person. So it's nothing to do with anxiety. Everything to do with will, intent, and action.
Gotcha. This one says, his whole theory on positive emotional tension and how he maintains it with his wife.
Oh man, that's not a quick answer. That's a whole book. I'm writing that book right now. I've maintained it in so many ways with my wife. Telling her I want her to touch my dick all the time. That's a way of creating positive emotional tension. Being playful, setting the tone and taking the lead. Going away and coming back, not giving her everything she wants when she wants it, surprising her, telling her I'm okay with her being jealous and insecure, and I want to hear all of her jealousies rather than me trying to fix them or make them go away. Mm-hmm. All of those things create lots of PET.
Gotcha. Okay, next one is how to go about meeting and dating women when moving to a new major city.
Oh, I mean, that's when you're at your best. Because you're starting over. Nobody knows you. You can go be anybody, anything you want. You can just show up, go where you want, and just be you. Now, here's the beauty. I even encourage men when they say, well, I don't have any success dating in my town. You know, in Seattle, they call it the Seattle freeze. That's where I'm from originally. And there's some truth to it, right? Well, in my town, women are this way. In my town, women are this way. And I say, okay, I bet I could come to your town and get laid. And why? Partly because I don't have the stereotype of what your town's like, and because I'm not from there. There's something about not being from there that kind of turns women on. So you're from out of town, you're new, and so that you've got an immediate turn on for women because you're not from there. And I would say, no matter where you are, keep living as if you're not from there. It makes you more interesting to women.
Gotcha. Okay. Next question is what advice he has for an introverted, below average looking guy in his late 40s to be able to meet women? Workplace, dating sites, and bars or clubs are not an option. By the way, tell him I really enjoyed his latest book.
Okay, thank you for all of that. I'm an introverted, not so good looking guy in his early 60s. And everywhere I go, my wife's Mexican, my Latina, my jealous Latina wife, we cannot go anywhere in this world, we travel a fair amount, without her pointing out women who are trying to get my attention, who are, you know, doing whatever women do to get a guy's attention. Some of the time I see it, some of the times I don't. And almost without exception, all of these women are exceptionally young. What's the cause of that? I got some personal theories, but I am fairly introverted, even though you might not know it. In this kind of environment, I'm on. I'm on a stage talking. But just in general life, I've learned to be confident. I've learned to be comfortable in my own skin. I've learned to talk to people everywhere I go. And to me, that's been a key. I've just become a social animal where I just talk to people. I'm okay looking. I'm not in bad shape for a 60-something-year-old guy. But mostly when I walk in a room, again, people sense that. Who is this guy? He is a somebody. Not because I'm anybody in particular, other than, you know, I'm comfortable in my own skin and I live life on my own terms. And that's amazingly attractive, even if you're introverted and not so great looking.
Right. Okay. All right. Next question is how to embrace failure as a man.
How to embrace failure as a man. You know, there's a lot of phrases out there that I like. Fail forward, fail fast, fail often. David Data says, fail while staying open. Failure is the pathway of the masculine adventure. It's not the destination. It's not who we are. I tell guys, for example, you know, they say, well, I'm afraid to make a mistake. I'm afraid of getting it wrong. I'm afraid of failing. And I say, well, you're talking to me because you read my book. Apparently, you liked my book. And I'll say, my book, No More Mr. Nice Guys, and even Dating Essentials for Men, my latest, neither of those are a chronicle of my successes. They're a record of my fuck-ups. They're how I failed and didn't get it right. Okay, all we do is just keep adjusting. If we don't take our, quote, failures as a personal reflection of our ability. And I give one example in Dating Essentials for Men where I took a surf lesson in a little Mexican town called Sayulita near Puerto Vallarta where I now live several years ago. You know, I went out, I got a coach, got a surfboard, went out, and for an hour probably rode 25 waves with the coach's assistance. I wiped out on every one of them. Some of them I stayed up longer than others. Some I actually felt the joy of riding the waves and surfing. Most of the time, I fell right away. I sucked a lot of salt water up into my nose. And I got up grinning ear to ear every time. I failed over and over and over again. And I had a blast doing it. And I came away not with the belief, oh, I'm a failure at surfing, or I'll never be able to surf, or surfing's too hard for me. I will just never try anything again. I came away thinking, that was a blast. You know, I might try it again. I might do some more of it. So I failed over and over and over again. And each failure was just a learning experience where I could learn something new, try something new the next time I got on the board. And life's like that. Approaching women is like that. Relationships like that. You know, when I used to jokingly say a few years ago before I got married again that I was a marriage therapist who'd been divorced twice and a dating guru who didn't have a girlfriend, and yet people kept paying me money. And I thought, okay, you know, they're not paying me for my successes. They're paying me what I learned from my failures. Mm-hmm. So monetize your failures. Learn from your failures. Go learn how to live a great life by failing.
Got it. Amazing answer. What is the biggest factor that has helped you become successful?
Oh, innate intelligence. I don't know. Willing to take risk. Man, that's a good question. I can't say that there's one factor. I think I am smart in some ways. I think I'm a good communicator in some ways. I have been willing to take risks. I have been willing to fail. I think what I would have to say is that the majority of my success has come from me, being real, and writing about teaching what I've learned in the process of just struggling with whatever I've struggled with. Mm-hmm. I often say I've bumbled my way through every relationship I've had. All right, so I just started teaching, you know, what I was learning through bumbling. I started writing about that. So maybe the success is primarily due that people can intimately relate to what I say, what I teach, what I write about, because they see I've lived it. Mm. And I didn't just learn it in school and then write a book about it or teach a seminar on it. I've lived it. It's my life. It's my struggle. And I've always taught what I've struggled with. So maybe that's a key part.
That's perfect. So how do you set boundaries with people, especially with chicks or clients you work with?
With chicks or clients, we'll put them in the same category. Yeah. Boundaries is crucial. I don't think I mentioned that briefly when I talked about the nice guy recovery process. Boundaries are crucial. Now, I didn't learn about boundaries for the first time till I was in my early 30s, in my second marriage, and already had a PhD in marriage and family therapy. And I went to a therapist. In our very first session with this therapist, she got a little string out, put it on the ground, and did a visual, you know, demonstration of boundary setting for me. I'd never heard of them. And I can do a whole workshop on boundaries, so I can't give a quick answer. But I tell people, boundaries are not about getting other people to be different. They're about getting us to be different. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate power we have to set a boundary is our willingness and ability to remove ourselves. So if you're not willing to walk away from that chick, you got no power to set a boundary. If you're not willing to have, you know, a client get pissed off at you, if you're not willing to fire a client, you got no power to set a boundary. If you're at work and you're not willing to walk away from a toxic situation, you got no power to set a boundary. So that's the quickest to the point answer I got.
That's perfect. That's amazing. Why do guys switch back to the nice guy behaviors after a while of not taking care of it?
I don't know if this is referring to like what I talked about a little bit earlier. You know, we get into a relationship and then all of a sudden we go back to being nice guys again. Mm-hmm. And partly I think it is because we get attached to outcome. We get attached to, oh no, I don't want to lose this girlfriend, or I don't want to lose this job, or I don't want to lose this friendship. And now we're attached. So we go back to being nice guys again, thinking that's the way to keep people and jobs and friends hanging around, when the truth is it does the very opposite. I don't know if that's what they were asking, but that's my best stab at it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Robert, for answering everyone's questions and being on here. For those who are listening right now, I guess the first thing I'm going to ask you is, what words of hope can you actually give them to help them become a better man? And if they're interested in knowing more about your work and how they can work with you or reading your books, where can they find you?
Okay. Now, I don't want anybody to try to become a better man. I want people to become more of who they already are. You're already an amazing human being. You just forgot that. So I want you to remember. And so my, as I said, I'll go back to what I said earlier. Don't try to do this alone. Go get into some kind of program, get a coach, get a therapist, and basically go in and say, I want to learn to love me. I want to learn to like myself as I wake up every day. That doesn't mean we can't work on ourselves. That doesn't mean we can't refine ourselves. But we got to learn to love ourselves as we are. So that's our main task on this planet, is learning to love us, not become better, not become different. Just love us, dance with us, celebrate us, let the world see us, welcome the world into meeting this great us. So that's where I think we get our hope. In terms of finding me, a couple places, drglover.com, just drglover.com, has all my classes, podcasts, workshops, seminars, anything you want to find out about me is at drglover.com. My newest website is datingessentialsformen.com. It'll link you to my new book, Dating Essentials for Men, the Dating Essentials for Men bonus bundle, to my blog, my weekly blog, Dating Essentials for Men. And if they just Google No More Mr. Nice Guy or Google Robert Glover, I come up about the top 10 spots for both of those. So I'm pretty easy to find.
Perfect. Thank you so much for hopping on, Robert. And for everyone who's watching this, you guys got so much gold from today's podcast. And I will see you guys soon.